Judge Bauer and I are pleased to welcome our colleague, Judge John Tharp, from the Northern District of Illinois, for today's cases. The first case today is Big Ridge Incorporated versus the Federal Mine Safety and Health Review Commission. And first counsel to argue will be Mr. Wolf.
Good morning, may it please the court. I'm Dan Wolf for the Peabody Operators. Peabody does not take lightly a decision to say no to the Secretary of Labor's Mine Safety and Health Administration. But in this case, too many important values are at stake. The privacy of its miners, fundamental principles of administrative law, and its own Fourth Amendment protections. The question is MSHA's right to get documents that it has not already required the operators to keep, or that the Mine Act itself does not require the operators to keep. In this case, we're talking about medical records and other records that have important and personal information about individual miners, highly embarrassing information. In another case, we could be talking about confidential business information, proprietary information, attorney-client communications. Under the Secretary's interpretation of her 103H authority, really, if her agent deems it relevant and necessary in the field, it's all in. The Commission decision emboldens an agency that already has a mighty enforcement power beyond the breaking point of her statutory authority, and we ask this Court respectfully to reverse. This is, in our opinion, a Chevron Step 1 case, and we start with Mine Act Section 103H, which says, in relevant part, the Secretary may reasonably require from time to time that operators establish and maintain records, make reports, or provide information. Basic administrative law principles, as well as the Mine Act, dictate that she do so through rulemaking. So, for example, if she expects to be able to cite my clients for not providing records, then she first has to create a duty for them to keep and maintain those records. And she hasn't done that here.
And does that duty have to be imposed via rulemaking? I mean, Congress knows how to say and expressly tell an agency to conduct rulemaking. It didn't do so here.
Well, in fact, Your Honor, I would submit that it did. The structure of the Mine Act, whether you're looking at mandatory standards under 101 of the Mine Act, or sort of the housekeeping administrative provisions, such as Part 50 under Section 508, say you create duties through rulemaking. These are the two processes. Every other section of the Mine Act where Congress wanted specific records, it was a mandatory it was a mandate to the agency to create records. So Congress wasn't giving the Secretary that discretion. In 103H, that discretion is there. But to implement that discretion, it's implemented through rulemaking. That's consistent with the Mine Act. It's consistent with the D.C. Circuit's decision in the American Mining Congress case, and it's consistent with fundamental principles of administrative law. Now, the regulation that she does cite doesn't get the job done. There's nothing in that regulation that requires my clients to keep the records that she has demanded.
No, nobody's saying you're required to keep those records. But when the rule was issued in 1977, it was pretty clear that it intended to reach more than just required records, right?
Well, Your Honor, I've got a couple. Granted, the preamble certainly says that. But here's how I would urge this Court to view the preamble. First of all, we know it's not law. CFRs mean...
Well, there's nothing in the regulation that prohibits that interpretation, and the issuing statement is crystal clear on this.
Well, but keep in mind, here we are 35, 40 years later. The operational people on the ground, they read the Code of Federal Regulations, and codification means something. So this goes to the reasonable expectation of privacy. When we're out 40 years hence, they're not going back and reading the preamble.
Speaking of reasonable expectation of privacy, though, I assume that in the event of a mine accident or job-related illness or controversy about such things, that the kinds of records we're talking about are available to the agency?
Well, that's not the situation before us, and I can't really...
But it does have to do with reasonable expectations of privacy.
Certainly the Mine Safety and Health Administration has investigatory powers.
It would reach precisely the same documents that are at issue here.
On a much narrower basis, not everybody in.
Specific to whoever was injured, et cetera.
But right? it might come through her investigation, or there might be some carve-outs, so information might be provided. Information in the form of Q&As and the operator gives information.
Surely the administration is not required to take the operator's word for anything.
Well, but they have the enforcement power to cite, and then you go into litigation, and then you go through the discovery process. In fact, every case that she cites involving Part 50 records was a litigation where documents were – so there was actual information about unlawful conduct. MSHA investigated, and then through litigation, documents were exchanged, and that's the natural course. And so there's redactions, there are protective orders, all that you would expect through our typical rights of discovery and the processes attendant thereto. The idea that they can go in and get sort of a sweeping collection, gathering of documents, is simply not consistent with either the historical interpretation of this. In fact, the 1981 ALJ decision, the only decision on point prior to the commission decision below, said exactly this. The audit authority found in the regulation that she has cited only extends to records that are required to be kept. And more importantly for this court's consideration,
the commission bound by its ALJ's precedents from 30 years ago?
Certainly not. But I'm tying this into the reasonable expectation of privacy because more importantly for this court's consideration is the 1987 opinion letter of the then top attorney for MSHA who articulated the Sewell standard as the secretary's own. We only can audit those records that are required to be kept by the statute or regulation. And
Did he say that? Yes.
He did say that.
Could you quote the relevant portion?
I would have to go to it, Your Honor.
The question from Mr. Hollenbach was about, quote, payroll and personal files containing medical and other information not required to be maintained by Part 50. And the conclusion was, as long as these audits do not constitute the wholesale warrantless search prescribed by Sewell, they are entirely permissible. Now, there are poor portions of the letter that suggest something to the contrary, but I guess I don't see it as quite as
well
clear-cut as you do.
Trying to find where in my brief we cite this, but the key point is not the wholesale portion of what his statement. The threshold statement he makes is that as a fundamental threshold matter, they have to be required by the Act or a regulation.
His language would be more persuasive than your summary. And I'm the question asked.
Mr. Clares?
The question asked that he was answering was about records not required to be maintained. And the answer was, you can go ahead and get that in those audits.
Well, I'll address this in my rebuttal if I can, Your Honor, so I can have time to read the relevant language. I would also note, though, as we point out in our briefs, the idea that the Secretary of Labor can get records that aren't required to be kept is 180 degrees in the opposite direction of what the Assistant Secretary of Labor has been telling Congress for the last 2+ years as it regards records. The Assistant Secretary has been asserting at Congress, we need subpoena power. We can't get records that aren't required to be kept.
Well, they don't have yours yet, right?
I'm sorry?
They don't have yours yet, right?
They don't, but one of my clients, Peabody Midwest, is facing right now a penalty that's north of $2 million if, you know, potentially. And that's something that that Peabody Midwest has been willing to take on. But everybody else in the industry, they caved under the threat of this daily penalty, which is another point about this scheme. If the secretary is correct in her interpretation, then she's probably the only agency that is allowed to get these records under compulsion without judicial scrutiny or the threat of daily penalty, which accrue as this litigation marches on. And it's an amazing power that she would have. And I see that I'm in my rebuttal time, so I'll step off to my colleague, Mr. Lestoka.
Thank you, and may it please the Court. I represent 24 minors whose medical records are being sought by the Secretary. Each of these minors want to keep their medical records private. Each objected, and they continue to object, to disclosing their medical records to MSHA. It's their privacy interests that are at risk here. And from the beginning, and with all respect, the minors feel that their interests have not been given the respect that they deserve. If the Secretary gets her way, apart from whatever monetary penalties the Secretary may extract from the operators, there will be significant collateral damage, and that significant collateral damage will be the loss of the minors' privacy interests. The Secretary is claiming sweeping authority to obtain these medical records. The Secretary is proceeding as if Section 103H authorizes her to demand whatever information she decides is relevant and whenever she wants it. But with respect, the Secretary's authority is more constrained than that. Section 103H of the statute requires that information sought by the Secretary, quote, be reasonably required. The word reasonably in Section 103H limits the Secretary's authority. There is no other reason for the presence of that word in Section 103H. And whether information is reasonably required depends on, first, what that information is, and two, how the Secretary has required it. The information here that the minors are interested in are medical records. Minors have a substantial privacy interest in their medical records. By their very nature, these records contain personal, confidential information. They can address the full range of illnesses, diseases, and injuries that are out there in the general population, including the most intimate and personal information concerning mental illnesses such as depression, HIV, cancers, addictions, medications, pregnancies. So these records have an acutely intimate nature, and that's the very reason for the very substantial case law cited in Miner's brief that holds that there is a constitutionally protected privacy interest in medical records. For example, in Kaufman, this court held that there is a qualified constitutional right to the confidentiality of medical records and communications. Given this right, the Secretary's regulation does not adequately protect minors' privacy interests. In fact, the regulation provides none privacy protections at all for minor medical records.
Well, but as you just pointed out, the statute requires that these records be reasonably related to the Secretary's duties. Why isn't that the protection that you need?
Well, the statute, Section 103A, says the records have to be reasonably required by the Secretary, Your Honor, not that they be reasonably related to the part that we are.
Well, how could they be reasonably required by the Secretary if they weren't reasonably related to the enforcement of these standards and that the mine has to operate under?
Well, records, including certain types of medical records, are reasonably related to the Secretary's interests. But the question is, under 103H, whether the Secretary has required those records to be maintained by the operator. And if she hasn't, and I'm not saying that she has to do that at all times, if she has not required them by a regulation, and she has several regulations out there that require mine operators to keep records concerning injuries, accident, and illnesses, and to fill out a form and submit those to MSHA. Those are what the mine operators here provided. And each of those records relate to one of the miners that I represent. So she has required certain medical information to be maintained by the operator and to be submitted by the Secretary. But what we're talking about here are records that the Secretary can see she has not required, but she's claiming a right to obtain nonetheless. So the key from our point is not that the Secretary cannot proceed without a regulation, but you have to look at what is the information that she's pursuing, and has that been reasonably required here? And our fundamental point is that the information that she's pursuing here are medical records. That was the first demand, and that she has not required those to be maintained. So in order to determine whether she's entitled to getting those records, as the case law on the qualified privilege on medical records holds, you have to look at make a detailed analysis of that particular request and what protections that are out there. There aren't any protections that are out there for the minors' medical records. So on weighing the balance, the Secretary hasn't demonstrated the interest through her regulation that would give the protection to these constitutionally protected medical records.
Could you address the statements made on this subject back in the 1977 rulemaking on 50.41,
yes,
where the agency talked about how important it was to collect medical information for epidemiological purposes, for example? And obviously there are serious questions about the reliability of mine operators' reporting of accidents, injuries, and illness. That's been turned up in the audits that have been conducted as well. And we've got the agency saying, in essence, we know we're dealing with sensitive information here, but we can keep this confidential. Other laws, FOIA, for example, protects this information.
Yes, Your Honor. As to the regulation that was adopted back in the 70s and the preamble explanation of that, Miner's point to this court is that regulation is invalid, that it denies the miner's rights to be protected from arbitrary and capricious action by the government. And we discussed this in our brief, that the basis, the explanation that was given by then the Mining Enforcement Safety Administration, who MFIS succeeded to, is very stark, and that the reasons that they offer as getting around the constitutional protections of privacy and medical records don't stand up to scrutiny. They basically said it's related to a purpose, but more is needed than that the record is related to a purpose.
They also point out that it's not as though these become public documents readily available. Could I ask you the same question I asked your colleague? That is, in the event of actual injuries, accidents that come to the attention of MSHA, do the medical records in the control of the employer for the affected employees become available to the administration?
No, I would say not, Your Honor. I think it's the same inquiry. The question is, when the government wants a record or a document, does it have statutory authority in order to obtain that record?
Are you telling me that after, for example, a serious mine accident or a high concentration of illnesses among workers at a particular mine, the administration does not have ways to get to these medical records?
Well, they have a way, Your Honor, and that is if they believe that they are entitled to certain information that is not being disclosed to them, they can initiate an action in district court under Section 108, and they have not done that.
I know they haven't done that here. We're dealing with a different enforcement mechanism, but all that is related, it seems to me, and if you disagree, please let me know. It seems to me that that's pretty relevant to the extent of expectations of privacy about medical records in the control of the employer.
Well, the agency has to have authority to get the records, and then they have to proceed properly in exercising that authority. They have proceeded in exercising authority through regulation in certain respect, and we think that regulation is invalid because it doesn't withstand scrutiny. And as to the protections that are in place, Your Honor, there were no privacy protections in place under MSHA's administrative scheme when these records were sought.
I don't think you've answered my question.
Sorry, Your Honor.
In the event of a mine accident or apparent mine-related illnesses, MSHA has the administration has the authority to investigate, right?
Yes.
And do its investigative powers include authority through any procedures, regardless of the extent of judicial review, but any procedures that would give them access to the medical records of the affected workers in the custody of the employer?
Yes, they can.
Why doesn't that tend to undermine the privacy interests and expectations?
The question is, how do they get them? They can initiate an action in district court, or can they issue an enforcement action?
Well, presumably any court, in the event of a mine accident and an operator refusing to turn over the medical records, is going to issue an order, don't you think?
But in terms of medical records, that court would weigh the privacy interests of the medical records of the miners.
Would the authority stop at the results of the accident or any medical problem was a result of the accident and as opposed to any other medical evidence that might be in the record?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
if there is something in the medical record that has nothing at all to do with the accident itself, but they still have authority to receive that when they ask for it after the accident and after the individual worker was injured?
We believe MSHA has a broad authority concerning the safety and health of minors. So our issue is not with whether ultimately MSHA might have authority if it's properly exercised. So, yes, Your Honor, if in an accident a medical record is relevant to their purpose and has been reasonably required, and if the privacy protections are placed around that, such as a district court judge would do, then the minors are getting the protections that they're entitled to under the Fourth Amendment.
Why would the operator even have records that aren't related to issues of workplace safety? By definition, I assume we're talking about records that are related to workmen's compensation claims and accidents. And aren't we, almost by definition, limiting the universe of records to records that are relevant to issues of workplace safety?
Well, there are a whole range of reasons why the operators might have this information. It could be a workplace accident, but it could be not related to a workplace accident if a minor has a disability that needs to be accommodated under the ADA. They might come forward and present information to the operator to accommodate them under ADA. Or it might be something under the Family Medical Leave Act, where it's just information that's being brought to the operator's attention about the health condition of the minor that's not related to directly to something that happened on site. So there is a whole range of different information that the operators must keep confidential and do secure that could fall within the sweep of the request for, quote, medical records. I used all my time.
Thank you, Mr. Laskowski.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Robin Rosenbluth, and I represent the Secretary of Labor in this case. Preliminarily, and just by the way of background, I wanted to apprise the Court of two changes in status of the mines in this case, even though the Secretary doesn't believe that affects the status of this case before the Court. It's the Secretary's understanding that both mines are in the process of closing, and they're in a non-producing state at this time and are scheduled to be sealed. However, there are still miners in the mines, and the Secretary is still conducting inspections of the mines. That's simply by way of background for the Court. Because the mining industry is one of the most hazardous industries in the nation, to protect miner safety and health, the mining industry is pervasively regulated. As such, under Section 103A of the Act, MSHA mine inspectors have the right to inspect and investigate mines, to enter them without a warrant, to, among other things, obtain information about health and safety conditions, obtain information about the causes of accidents, injuries, and illnesses, and to gather information with respect to health and safety standards and to determine compliance with standards and with the Act.
Would the physical condition of a miner be of interest to the Secretary, whether there was an accident or no accident?
Absolutely, because the Secretary, for epidemiological reasons, also to determine whether to set standards to look at. For example, incidence of black lung disease and determine
pneumoconiosis. I learned that a long time ago.
Say it better than me. Yes, Your Honor. So there are reasons that the Secretary would want to look at medical records, but they're all only related to her duty to protect minor safety and health. Complementing the Secretary's inspection and investigation authority under Section 103A are Section 103H, which, as you know, requires operators to maintain and establish records as the Secretary may reasonably require to enable her to perform her functions under the Act, to make reports as the Secretary may reasonably require to perform her functions under the Act, and to provide such information as the Secretary may reasonably require to perform her functions under the Act.
Can I ask you about 103H? part of that language looks reasonably broad and useful to the Secretary for purposes of these audits. But another sentence there authorizes the Secretary to compile, analyze, and publish in summary or detailed form such reports or information so obtained. Does that mean that the Secretary has the authority to publish, for example, the medical records of individual minors obtained through these audits?
No, she does not. The Secretary's authority, implicit in that provision, just as in the 103C, which authorizes the Secretary to obtain, which requires operators to give information to the Secretary about toxic substances and agents and minors' exposures to those agents, implicit in those grants of authority, we believe, is the Secretary's responsibility to protect sensitive information.
Is that spelled out in the regulations?
It is not spelled out in the regulations per se.
Why not? She's going to restrain herself. Why didn't she say so?
Well, certainly in the preamble, the Secretary noted the concern apparently from an operator that was expressed, by the way, simply under one of, not with
That's
respect
kind of
to
thin soup, isn't it? I mean, you're relying eventually on a Secretary's total discretion. She decides whether or not.
The Secretary is required, every person in the Secretary's office takes a course, which
Where would I find that in writing?
It's in Joint Appendix 90, which is every
without me looking at the Joint Appendix, where would I find it? And what does it say specifically?
It says that is an authorization, an acknowledgement form, and a statement that every employee of the Secretary and every independent contractor, the Secretary has to sign after they have taken a course on protecting sensitive personal identifiable information, which acknowledges that they understand that they can be disciplined for disclosing the information inappropriately. We acknowledged in the preamble to the rule when the privacy issue was brought up that we would not release the information under FOIA Exemption 6. There are also safeguards in place that are the information
that inhibits her right to publish the results of what she gets.
She cannot publish them based on those.
It says so.
We believe again that that provision
doesn't mean what it says.
Well, implicit in the provision are the privacy rights of minors. And again, if you were to read that provision that way, then
but it doesn't say that.
It's not contained in the provision. It's implied in the provision.
Does the FOIA exception require that information be kept confidential, or does it merely give the government the option?
The provision itself does not require it. However, the Secretary's we have stated in the preamble that we will not divulge the record, and the privacy and our privacy training, and all government employees are bound to not disclose private information.
By what authority?
Under the authority that is in Joint Appendix 90, and in that
Appendix
document,
B is an affidavit from one of the minors.
Okay, I'm sorry. I may have the wrong. It's the very last document in the Joint Appendix, and on that document there are provisions, including CFR sites, which memoranda from the Office of Personnel, which apply to all government agencies. They're cited in that, and they require all government employees to take training and to not disclose private information. While the Secretary's interpretation under which operators must provide, of Section 103H, under which operators must provide such information as she reasonably requires, is plainly consistent with the language of the Act, The operator's interpretation reads into that provision two limitations which have no support in the language, A, a rulemaking requirement, and B, a requirement that she can only request information that she has also required operators to maintain, neither of which has any support in the language, and as a result, their interpretation must be rejected.
Could you explain to us, in terms of the statutory authority, this authorized representative issue that's been talked about in the briefs? Who is an authorized representative, and who was it who was asking for the documents, demanding the documents in this case?
Under Section 504 of the Mine Act, an authorized representative has to be someone with a certain amount of training, which is spelled out in that provision.
These are people who typically lead the inspections?
They typically do the inspections. There is no because the information was not given, ever provided in this case, there's no authorized representative actually looked at the information. We don't have it yet.
Right. But were the demands made by authorized representatives in the course of inspections? I understand there were letters sent ahead of time.
And when an inspector arrived, I think on October 28th or 29th, after the letters were issued and after the operator said they were not going to divulge the information, an authorized representative asked again for the information when they were told that that citation was issued, Your Honor. And if I may briefly address the argument that there are no standards in place under 30 CFR 50.41 or under Section 103H that would curtail the Secretary's ability to obtain any document in the world. Again, as Your Honor pointed out, Section 103H specifically requires that the Secretary authorizes the Secretary to only request information that she reasonably requires. We read the reasonably requires as being related to her authority under the Act to protect minor safety and health, which is clearly delineated in Section 103A.
But is there, Mr. Wolf says the answer to this question is no. Is there any other agency that has the degree of plenary authority to require the production of documents without some form of judicial review available before penalties can be assessed? Is there any other federal agency? If not, why does MSHA warrant that sort of extraordinary grant?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, there are under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act in the McCames case we cited, the agency has the authority and the court upheld the authority of the agency to inspect documents related to misbranding and adulterating drugs. It was the FDA, I believe. Under this court's decision in the Civil Aeronautics Board case, which though the CAB no longer exists, this court upheld the ability of the CAB under the Federal Aviation Act to inspect documents as long as those documents were reasonably related to the interests that the CAB were trying to protect, or I'm sorry, to the functions of the CAB. And with respect to the argument concerning subpoena power, while it may be true that the Secretary doesn't have subpoena power, except when she holds public hearings under accidents after accidents have occurred at the mine, that does not negate the fact that she has the power Congress conferred to her under Section 103H, as well as the power that she, through notice and comment rulemaking 30 years ago, has under Section 50.41. The Secretary, and there is nothing inconsistent about the Secretary asking Congress for subpoena power. She, first of all, with general subpoena authority, she would be able to get documents from third parties. She would be able to require operators as well as third parties to testify under oath. And we agree with, I think, what the court was sort of implying that with subpoena authority, that it carries more gravitas or authority. We feel that we would be more likely to get information that is potentially critical to protecting minors' safety and health quickly, more readily. Operators are just more inclined, we think, than responding to a letter from MSHA demanding documents. We would also disagree with minors' position that the facts of this case show that the scheme for obtaining information is overly coercive because everyone but Peabody has ultimately produced the authority. Of the 39 mines that we audited in this case, 10 of them initially contested the Secretary's rights to get the information. And though all of them but the two Peabody mines ultimately capitulated, as the miners refer to it, we would submit that perhaps they capitulated because they only did so after a neutral judge had ruled that the plain meaning of Section 103H, as well as the plain meaning of Section 50.41, entitled the Secretary to the documents. With regard to the argument that the Secretary's requests are for these documents or allow her to rule by decree and by fiat, the fact of the matter is, as occurred in this case, the commission has reviewed, the judge and the commission reviewed the reasonableness of the Secretary's request, the relevance of her request to the relevance of the documents to her need for them and the necessity of the documents, and they both found that the documents requests were reasonable, were relevant and necessary. As such, there is no rule by fiat, as miners would have it. And of course, while it's true that that miners have a constitutional right to privacy, this court has held, as they acknowledge, the right is not absolute, and certainly the Secretary's compelling interest in having accurate illness and reporting information outweighs individual miners' privacy interests. And we would simply, on the issue of the safeguards, we would note that there is no indication in the record that the Secretary has ever, there is no indication the Secretary has ever wrongly divulged the sensitive information of minors. And under the court's decisions in NASA and the Second Circuit's decision in Barry, those are strong factors weighing in favor of allowing the Secretary access.
Can you back up a little, though? Because if you go back to Donovan, it was expressly noted in Donovan as one of the factors that made the inspection scheme reasonable, that the Act provides a specific mechanism for accommodating any special privacy concerns that a specific mine operator might have. I think we could extend that by extension to the miners at the mine as well. One of the factors that contributed to the court's decision was that there was a process available to raise privacy concerns in the context that was being discussed there of a refusal of entry onto the mine premises. Why isn't that same sort of provision or capability to be available to the mine operator or the miners to raise a Fourth Amendment issue prior to required compliance by the mine?
Your Honor, they have that authority. If the operator continues to refuse to provide to respond to an information request, the Secretary does not have the right to self-help. Just as
you're at that point able to impose penalties and so the exercise of your Fourth Amendment right comes at the potential expense of running the risk of substantial penalties.
And that's the exact same case under Donovan. Again, if a mine operator refuses the secretary entry into a mine, the operator can be cited for violating the Mine Act, but the only way that the secretary can obtain relief, she doesn't have the right to self-help, is to go under 108 and get an injunction. And I think that was the point in the Marshall-Staub case, that the district court then would be able to redact provisions of that it may feel are not reasonably related to the secretary's information requests. And also before the commission, operators have a right when they refuse to give up information to ask if they truly believe that there is something in one of those records that is sensitive and the secretary has no need to know it, they can point that out to the commission and the commission can redact that information. The proper procedure, however, is not to do what they did in this case and to say, okay, there may be some time in the future, some provision that some statement in these records that the secretary doesn't need to know, even though the secretary may think she does, and therefore we are not going to give you any records whatsoever. And that's what they have done in this case. And with respect to the argument, and it is true that and that works because the secretary, and under the rule, the secretary makes the first cut under 50.41 as to what she believes is relevant and necessary, and that is the precise procedure that this court in Civil Era Nautics Board recognized was appropriate under that scheme. But again, it can be reviewed, and it's reviewed by the commission, or if the secretary has to go into district court, it's reviewed by the district court judge. And as your Honor pointed out, Section 108, which authorizes enforcement injunctions for failure to provide information, for failure to provide reports that the secretary requests, plainly is not the only mechanism by which she was meant to get these records. A fair reading of that provision authorizes the secretary, all the other parts of that provision authorizes the secretary to get district court relief when the operator does something that is plainly contrary to the Mine Act, such as denying entry to mine inspectors or failing to comply with an order or decision under the Act. And in summary, I would just like to state to the court that as this court has recognized in the Skill case, an agent in an analogous situation, an agency can't reasonably be expected to know in advance every type of information it may need, as the Third Circuit recognized in the case cited in our brief. The ability to obtain information quickly, document information is the backbone of effective administrative enforcement. It cannot be that, given the pervasive regulation of mining and the extreme dangers to mine safety and health, that the secretary is responsible for protecting, the Congress meant to deprive her of this backbone of that she needs to effectively enforce the Mine Act.
Does the administration have excess personnel and budget available to waste time on pointless searches?
No, she does not. She always needs more personnel to do that.
Every agency is undermanned and overworked.
Including the courts.
I thought especially the courts.
Okay.
Absent any further questions, I yield my time.
Underpaid. I left that out.
Thank you. I think the defense or the plaintiff's time expired, but you can each have 1 minute to in rebuttal. Is that, have I got the time right? Or? Okay, I wasn't sure whether we were keeping time individually or not. All right, Mr. Wolf, you're in better shape than I thought.
Feel better already. Judge Hamilton, you asked about the authority in an investigation situation to get these documents. You asked me, you asked Mr. Listoka, and I would submit that no. The difference, the analysis is the same. And if there's a policy gap, and with respect to Ms. Rosenbluth, she finished with this policy argument that it would be unfathomable that we don't have this right. It's not for this court to fix. We have not disputed the reasonableness, potential reasonableness of her request. But if there's a gap, if there's a policy gap in her enforcement powers, that's for Congress to fix or the executive branch through regulation. And I submit that Assistant Secretary of Labor Joseph Maine was saying that very thing to Congress over the last 2+ years when he was appealing for subpoena power. And Judge Tharp, to your question, which I don't think Ms. Rosenbluth addressed, is why didn't she go through the 108 process? Mr. Listoka informed you why that process would at least have given some cure to the Fourth Amendment issue. It's not still not consistent with how we think the statute should be read, but at least the Fourth Amendment issue would be addressed on the front end. And with respect to all the other operators who contested these citations, what is not being spoken to is the sword of Damocles, which is the daily penalty. Now, it is somewhat ironic that I stand up to you in front of you today representing Peabody, the one operator that actually stood up to this threat of daily penalties. But the fact of the matter is everybody else caved, because that's what the threat of daily penalties does, and that's why the cases also say you can't do this. You have to allow judicial scrutiny, or there has to be certainty and regularity in the statute that substitutes itself for a warrant. You can't just come in under your own authority and say, you either give this to us or we're going to start racking up daily penalties. That is self-enforcement. That does cut against the grain of the cases. Judge Hamilton, you asked me about what the Associate Solicitor of Labor said. And the question posed, as you know, back in 1987, I'm sorry, was there was an inquiry as to MSHA's authority to get payroll and personnel files containing medical and other information not required to be maintained by Part 50. And his response, I would submit to you in relevant part, was, with respect to the permissible scope of the audit, it is our position that MSHA has a right to access to any information required to be maintained by the Mine Act or the implementing regulations of Part 50. And then it cited the Commission's decision, and that's Joint Appendix page 76. And then it cited to the Commission's decision in Peabody. Peabody was a 103D case, meaning 103D of the Mine Act talks about records put together in the investigation of an accident. And it says, you shall keep these open and available to MSHA. That's what the Commission was talking about in Peabody, and that's what distinguishes that sort of line of reasoning from what's happening here. That's what Mr. Clare was saying, and I say this not because the Secretary is bound forever to Mr. Clare's 1987 interpretation. I say it because that, coupled with the 1981 ALJ decision in Sewell, more as an effective matter, kind of superseded or rendered into oblivion these preamble comments about medical records, so that here we are again, like I said earlier, 35, 40 years hence, the operational folks, the guys that are actually the HR manager, who's trained in ADA compliance and FMLA compliance, he comes for the first time in his career face-to-face with a request for these sensitive medical records. Where does this come from? He looks at Part 50. He looks at 5041. It doesn't say anything about records that I'm required to keep. And so that's why they said no. So I submit to you that the operational folks were just doing their job. As Judge Tharp, for the other agencies, the CAB case, judicial review prior to enforcement of that records request. And in the case arising under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, criminal investigation. We're not dealing with a criminal investigation here. We're dealing with sort of a general audit. There's no allegation of unlawful conduct. It's a completely different situation. I submit to you that I was correct, that there is no other agency with this broad authority, as the Secretary claims in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf.
Thank you.
Mr. Laskalka, 1 minute.
From the miner's perspective, the Secretary is not reasonably required its medical records. From the miner's perspective, the Fourth Amendment and the case law that the Secretary relies on saying possession is the sine qua non of Fourth Amendment right, it's not correct. There must be a particular inquiry into the records at issue and what protections are in place. And in this case, there are no privacy protections that are enforceable that are in place. They're written in sand. It's an internal memo, which MSHA is quick to tell mine operators when they raise issues, compliance issues, is not enforceable. It's interpretive. This is not an enforceable privacy protection. It should be in the regulations. And the risk of penalty is what the problem is constitutionally here. The Secretary is requiring records to be produced, miners' medical records, under substantial threat of penalty and sanctions to the operator. Instead, they have an avenue where they can get an inquiry by the district court to decide whether their request is reasonable. So the miners believe that their records are not getting adequate protections for reasons of standards validity, for reasons of the Fifth Amendment, and for reasons of the Fourth Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Lestalka. The case is taken under advisement.